VOA welcomes you on this Tuesday, March the 10th. This is International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, as the number of COVID-19 cases rise worldwide, more closures and cancellations lead to serious global economic impacts.
It's clearly extremely serious. It's not, to use a cliche, it's not quite a perfect storm, but it's heading in that direction. You've got a disease spreading and you've got international disputes between producers of a major product, oil. This is not a good thing at all.
Another big day of voting for the Democratic presidential nomination contest, and a classic rock band wins a big lawsuit over an iconic, internationally renowned hit. It's all on today's International Edition. Sweeping new restrictions are being put into place around the world as the battle to contain the new coronavirus ramps up. As COVID-19 continues to spread across the globe, Italy is extending its quarantine to the entire country as its prime minister urges citizens to stay home. The order essentially puts 60 million people on lockdown. Israel is ordering all visitors there to be quarantined just weeks before Passover and Easter, while Spain is closing all schools in and around its capital. World Health Organization Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said Monday that the threat is real, but it's not too late to take action. But he said global coordination is critical.
Countries that continue finding and testing cases and tracing their contacts not only protect their own people, they can also affect what happens in other countries.
More than 113,000 people worldwide have been infected with the virus, and more than 3,900 have died. Most of the cases are in China, but its proportion is shrinking as the caseload grows elsewhere. More than 62,000 people have already recovered. Vice President Mike Pence says most people in the United States are not at risk of contracting the virus.
Testing is now available in all state labs in every state in the country.
White House reporters, though, asked the vice president Monday if he or President Trump had been tested for the coronavirus, since they were both recently at an event where someone attending had tested positive.
Have you been tested, Mr. President?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Has he been tested?
I have not been tested for the coronavirus.
Has the president been tested?
He's been in contact with people who were in proximity to somebody who had the virus.
Let me be sure and get you an answer to that. I honestly don't know the answer to the question.
And since then, we have learned that neither has been tested. Also Monday in the U.S., a cruise ship with a cluster of coronavirus cases that forced it to idle off the California coast for days arrived back at the port of Oakland as officials prepared to start bringing passengers to military bases for quarantine or get them back to their home countries. The Grand Princess has more than 3,500 people on board. 21 of them were tested positive for the virus. Monday, state and U.S. officials prepared to transfer thousands, as we said, to U.S. military bases. Not all passengers, though, are happy about that plan.
I guess we're going to go to a military facility to quarantine, but I like to go home and be quarantined.
Workers wearing gloves and yellow protective gear placed a large tent by a platform that passengers will be using to disembark. Meanwhile, Nancy Messonnier of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says many Americans should put things in perspective. She offered some reassurance.
There's a good chance many will become sick. But again, based on what we know about this virus, we do not expect most people to develop serious illness.
In mainland China, where the virus exploded at first, more than 80,000 people have been diagnosed and more than 58,000 have so far recovered. So how does a person know if they have symptoms of the COVID-19 virus or if it's just a common cold or the flu? Joining us now to answer that question is Arthur Kaplan, professor at New York University Langone Medical Center.
Well, the symptoms, as with a lot of these viral things, start out as flu-like with the aches and the pains and the fevers and all. I think really what happens is it pushes into a pneumonia. You have a really difficult time breathing. That's the time most people wind up at the hospital. To be honest, there still isn't enough testing kits out there in China or, for that matter, the U.S. to get a really confirmed diagnosis if somebody really has this. The Chinese, you remember there was a big jump in Chinese cases last week?
Right.
And it doubled?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it didn't really double. What happened was the Chinese said, look, initially we're only going to count cases that have been diagnosed using a genetic test kit to say that virus is the new coronavirus. But they ran out of test kits, so they didn't have enough, so they started to say, well, let's just count what doctors think is the disease, and that's why it doubled. It didn't actually double. It just was reclassified. So finding out there is a test, but we don't have a lot of those tests lying around, so I think you're going to get doctors trying to guess.
Well, what happens to the body after it contracts this virus?
Goes into your lungs, can cause fluid buildup. That's the pneumonia. Then bacteria can grow there, and that is what kills you. It's basically kind of a lung failure, if you will. So that's the course of the disease goes that way. We don't know some other things. We're not really sure how much it's spread by sneezing or coughing or touching, or for that matter, even fecal contamination like hepatitis, another virus that spreads by not washing your hands and things like that. So pretty new days for the understanding how this virus really transmits.
I understand it could even be transmitted potentially through sex.
Could be. It's possible. I tend to think that this kind of cold virus is happier going after your nose, your lungs, and your breathing areas, but it's possible.
How big of a public health threat do you see this in general?
I think it's a big public health threat. I think it's on a par bigger than we saw with Ebola. We know how much havoc that caused. It's up there past the flu because I think it's deadlier than that. I think it's a pretty serious disease. Cold viruses, you know, they get into all of us. Think of how many people we know that had a cold during a cold season. You know, everybody you know potentially could be infected. That's a bad, bad sign. So I worry that we could get a very large outbreak. The other thing that worries me is if you take countries like China and they quarantine or more people get sick, it interrupts the supply lines. You know, a lot of our medicines in the U.S., the ingredients come out of China. If their factories are down or they're quarantining or they have a lot of people sick, that gets in the way of being able to make medicines. And there are obviously other economic implications that affect public health, too. If there's panic or the economy turns down, that just leads to trouble as well. I see China's had outbreaks reported in some of their prisons. Tend to say, well, we certainly don't want to treat prisoners if there's a short supply, or maybe not people who are in ICE detention facilities, but you also don't want the equivalent of that Japanese ship. You don't want to turn prisons into incubators or detention facilities into incubators for the disease. So we got some hard choices ahead of us if the scenario turns out, say, in the worst possible way.
All right, that's Arthur Kaplan, professor at New York University Langone Medical Center. Growing alarm over the coronavirus combined with a crash in oil prices sent shockwaves through the world markets Monday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average tumbled 7.8% Monday, its steepest drop since the financial crisis of 2008. European stock indexes also registered their heaviest losses since the darkest days of the 2008 meltdown. Global oil prices suffered their worst percentage losses since the start of the Gulf War in 1991 after Russia refused to roll back production in response to depressed demand and Saudi Arabia signaled it will ramp up its own output. While low oil prices can translate into cheaper gas, they wreak havoc on energy companies and countries that count on petroleum revenue. At one point, stocks dropped so much to the point that it triggered a drop on Wall Street so sharp that it triggered, as we said, a first automatic halt in trading in more than two decades. Bankrate.com's Mark Hamrick explains.
The use of circuit breakers in the stock market is something that's meant to allow essentially the flow of business to be orderly. And so the S&P 500 hit the first benchmark of a decline of 7%, and that pauses trading for 15 minutes.
Hamrick says investors have been through huge downturns like this before and have recovered. Meanwhile, President Trump Monday said his administration is meeting with Congress and finding ways to help businesses and the American public get through the coronavirus outbreak.
The virus that everybody is talking about all over the world, no matter where you go, that's what's on people's minds. And we are going to take care of and have been taking care of the American public and the American economy.
The staggering losses immediately raised fears that a recession could be on the way in the U.S. and abroad. And the record-breaking 11-year bull market may be coming to an abrupt end in a way no one even imagined just a few months ago. Well, between the sell-offs and the growing fear over potential global economic damage from the coronavirus that's infected more than 110,000 people worldwide, the travel bans, the closing of schools and stores, and cancellations of conventions and celebrations are adding to growing concerns. Joining us now is Professor Kenneth Button. He is an economics professor at George Mason University Schar School of Public Policy and Government at George Mason University. Thank you for being with us. Can you tell us how serious this is?
Well, given the flexibility of the world economy and its interrelationships, it's clearly extremely serious. It's not, to use a cliche, it's not quite a perfect storm, but it's heading in that direction. You've got a disease spreading and you've got international disputes between producers of a major product, oil. Now, this is not a good thing at all. And the big difficulty, I think, with it is that people are frightened because there's no vaccine against it. And that makes it very uncertain how fast and how far it's going to spread.
And that, of course, is leading to all these extreme measures to try to keep it from spreading, which is, of course, dealing a blow to major industries, which have pretty much come to a standstill all over the world. If this continues, what do you see happening?
The problem in the world these days is that we like to keep costs down. The best way of doing that is to have what's known as just-in-time production. In other words, companies and industry do not keep stocks. So any little kink in the system just magnifies and you have total closures and seizures to the system. And that's what's happening now. There's an interesting story in the Wall Street Journal about producers, I believe, in Bangladesh who produce women's underwear and they can't get supplies of the straps. Sounds trivial and even amusing, but it's not. That's indicative of the integration we have in the world these days.
Do you see the U.S. economy or even the global economy heading toward a recession?
Well, recession is a technical term which is used. It's certainly going through a lot of trauma at the moment. Recession is something which is quite a longish term. Mm-hmm. It all depends really on psychology. John Maynard Keynes, a great economist, talked about animal spirit. What he meant was, if you get one animal moving in a herd, everyone follows. And that seems to be the problem with these pandemics and things like it. And we're certainly, so whether it's going to be a recession technically or not, I'm not so concerned about it. It's the real impact on the psychology of the world economy in a somewhat longer term.
If the virus continues to spread and they don't get a handle on it, how bad could this be?
Well, it could be really bad. Italy, we've heard about the clampdown, but local transport in Italy is continuing to run so that people can go to work. So they're keeping the economy working. It may be depressed somewhat, but they're still making sure people get to work. It's the people who need medical care or workers who are being given permits to travel. That does suggest they're taking the economic side very, very seriously.
Travel industry not doing well.
Certainly not. I've just been looking at some figures for United and so on. And they're not doing well. They're cutting flights, having to do what they have to do to maintain confidence in the industry. I don't think the airlines can do much about it themselves except respond sensibly, keeping the planes clean, checking on staff, following up customers if there's a problem with a potential case. I think they're doing everything they can to keep it going. The real industry which is being impacted, of course, is cruise shipping. That's not really transport, it's more of a leisure activity, but I think cruise ships are really going to suffer badly in the near future once this pandemic has passed.
Oil prices dropping. The president noted that it was good for Americans, pricing at the pump. Is there anything governments can do? The president earlier talked about potential payroll tax cuts and other relief efforts to businesses and citizens. Do any of those things actually do anything?
Well, I think the first thing a government's got to do is keep up confidence, or rather stop it falling any further, perhaps would be a better way of putting that. The government can do things. They can stimulate demand. But the problem with this is, if they're blockages in the supply chain, however much you stimulate demand, it's not going to have a huge effect because the blockage is still there. You can't suddenly gets components for computer production if China is protecting its own citizens from the disease. It's not that simple. The government can do things, well, they are doing things with the reduction in interest rates and things of that kind. The Italian government are pumping billions into their economy, but really it's a change in confidence that's required so people go back to work, our businessmen invest, consumers consume, and people go about their everyday lives in a normal fashion. And the government can help in doing that by making sure they contain the virus, and also by making sure as much as possible everyday life goes on as normal. I think economic stimulus may be psychologically important in this, because people like to see the government acting. And I'm a believer, indeed, if you go back to the 1930s, your President Roosevelt in those days talked about the only thing to fear is fear itself. So you've got to stop people being fearful. Basically, that's the role of government, and that may involve some government expenditure, various measures. It should involve some good oratory from senior people in the country, irrespective of their political persuasion.
All right. That is economics professor Kenneth Button from the Georgetown University Schar School of Policy and Government. Well, there are myths and misinformation swirling around about the virus and who is actually susceptible. VOA's Jason Patinkin gets some clarification from Columbia University epidemiologist Dr. Emily Radden.
Another thing that people are worried about is, of course, who can get it? Who is at risk? Because people want to know, are them and their loved ones at risk of getting this? And so far, there's been, you know, most of the deaths have been concentrated in the elderly population. So you have people saying, well, look, kids don't have to worry about it, or young people don't have to worry about it. If you're healthy, you don't have to worry about it. Is that the case? Is this something that only elderly people or people whose health is already compromised need to worry about?
No, I think our safest assumption at this point is that anyone can get this virus. I think the idea that the virus is limited to certain groups is coming from two factors. Well, one, if we look at the patient population, the confirmed cases that we know about, we do see that there are more confirmed cases among certain groups, among people who are somewhat older. So the original data from China was showing that much of the patient population was over 30. Some of the initial data from China was showing that there were more men in the patient population or those people diagnosed. However, we have seen infections certainly across genders, across the age spectrum, from very young children to much older people. And looking at the patient population only allows us to see who's being diagnosed. So there's a major question that remains about, for example, in children, whether children are simply less likely to get the virus, or whether they, for some reason, are just having milder symptoms and so are therefore less likely to be diagnosed. We don't know which is the case right now. We have to assume that it's possible for children to get it, and there are ongoing scientific investigations to clarify this question. Similarly, with the initial data on men and women, we don't know if men were showing up more in the patient population, some of the earlier groups, because they were, for some reason, more susceptible, which would be a little bit hard to explain biologically, or simply because they were more likely to travel, more likely to have more contacts, more exposures, because more men in China smoke, leading to, you know, possible respiratory susceptibility, because men were more likely to seek care or get diagnosed. Again, we don't know whether that's the piece of the pie we're seeing or whether for some reason that's a more susceptible group. So for now, we should assume that anyone could be at risk for the virus.
Here are some of the other stories we are following at VOA. A day after South Korea's military detected the launches of three short-range projectiles off of North Korea's northern coast, Pyongyang's Korean Central News Agency confirms that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un supervised his second live-fire artillery exercise in a week as the country continues to expand its military capabilities. An Associated Press investigation into the October 2019 suicide of a detained immigrant found a pattern of neglect and apparent violations of government policies at the jail where he was being detained at a time when the U.S. government is ramping up its detention of migrants to record levels. Opposition activists in a war monitor report finds a complete absence of Russian and Syrian government warplanes in the skies of Idlib, and a relative calm in the area following a ceasefire deal brokered by Turkey and Russia. Well, in Democratic presidential race, another round of primaries today could be a crucial test in what has become a two-man nomination race between former Vice President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. As VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on what's at stake in these six states that are holding contests today.
Former Vice President Joe Biden campaigning in Mississippi, looking to expand his lead in the Democratic race on Tuesday.
I really believe we've created a movement and a movement powered by the backbone and base of the Democratic Party, a movement that's going to defeat Donald Trump and restore the soul of this nation.
Biden has picked up the endorsement of two former rivals, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker and California Senator Kamala Harris.
I believe in Joe.
Thank God for Bernie Sanders.
Biden's main remaining rival, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, touted the endorsement of civil rights leader Jesse Jackson as he campaigned in Michigan.
So brothers and sisters, let us go forward. Let's win on Tuesday. Let's win the Democratic nomination. Let's defeat Trump. Let's transform this country. Thank you all very much.
Sanders also continues to complain that the Democratic establishment has united to stop him.
The question, which is what the media is preoccupied with, how can we stop Bernie Sanders? We got to stop the coronavirus and we got to stop Bernie Sanders. What a terrible thing.
They'll call Super Tuesday for nothing.
Biden's dramatic turnaround in the Democratic race last week in the Super Tuesday primaries also caught the attention of President Donald Trump.
I was all set for Bernie. I was ready to go. And then I say, you know, I don't think I'm running against Bernie. I think it's going to be very hard for him to come back.
Biden won 10 of the 14 contests last week on Super Tuesday and totally reframed the Democratic race, says Larry Sabato.
I like to say that Biden was given the last rites and now he's Lazarus because he has arisen from the dead. He has managed to surprise everybody and win a ton of primaries by landslide proportions in most cases.
Biden's success drove two other rivals from the race, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Which candidate can defeat Donald Trump?
Sanders' best chance to regain momentum may come Tuesday in the Michigan primary, says Jim Kessler.
If Bernie doesn't score a big victory in Michigan, you're really starting to see the end of the possibility of his candidacy. And then I think there'll be some unifying then.
In addition to Michigan, Idaho, Mississippi, Missouri, and Washington State hold primaries on Tuesday, and North Dakota will hold a Democratic caucus. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And still ahead on International Edition.
Ethiopian Airlines aims to show the African girls that there are no professions reserved for men only.
You're listening to VOA News.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
VOA's International Edition continues. For the sixth year in a row, an all-female Ethiopian Airlines flight crew flew from Addis Ababa to Washington, D.C. Sunday to celebrate International Women's Day. VOA's Amharic Services, Habtamu Sayoun and Eden Garamu were at the welcoming ceremony at Washington's Dulles International Airport. VOA's Salem Solomon narrates the report.
To celebrate International Women's Day, an all-female flight crew from Ethiopian Airlines flew from Addis Ababa to Washington, D.C. The flight marked the sixth consecutive year the airline has made the symbolically important flight with a female crew.
Ethiopian Airlines aims to show the African girls that there are no professions reserved for men only, and inspire them to have no limits to their dreams of becoming anything that they set their hearts to.
The airline, the largest in Africa, has made hiring women a priority. 40% of its employees are female, including 32% in management positions. The airline has female pilots, aircraft technicians, engineers, flight dispatchers, load controllers, and ramp operators. Rahel said too often in Africa, girls are taught that their only worth is to marry and live a domestic life.
When their brothers are sent off to schools, girls are mostly held back at home to help out as well as be groomed on how to be a good wife, a good mother, a good homemaker. Much work is needed to educate parents and communities in general that their daughters can be anything and everything their sons can.
Captain Amsale Gwalu, who piloted the transatlantic flight, became the first female airliner captain in Ethiopian history in 2010. She said it is important for women to support one another.
The main thing is networking. Women should have a connection among one another and exchange ideas. The other thing is supporting each other. For example, when we fly with an all-female crew, even when there are standard procedures, there are things that make you happy.
In 2015, there were only 8 female pilots at the airline. Today, Gwalu said there are 20, with another 24 training in aviation school.
The change has come. Women support each other, we have our own groups, and we show that it is possible. And by supporting each other, showing that it is achievable, is our responsibility.
Ethiopia's ambassador to the U.S. Fitsum Arega says his government has made it a priority to promote women to positions of power, noting that half the prime minister's cabinet is made up of women, and the country now has a woman president and chief justice of Supreme Court.
There's an African proverb that says, if you educate a man, you educate one person. If you educate a woman, you educate a nation.
With Eden Garamo and Habta Musiyum, Salim Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Well, actor Max von Sydow has died in France at the age of 90, according to his agent, AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Saraletta has a look at his career.
Max von Sydow is probably best known for playing a priest in The Exorcist. He also played Jesus in The Greatest Story Ever Told, the cat-stroking villain in Never Say Never Again, Ming the Merciless in Flash Gordon, the knight who played chess with death in The Seventh Seal, and the three-eyed raven in Game of Thrones. Even with a career that expansive, von Sydow said in a 1993 AP interview, people could not get his name right.
Somebody asked me, so what's your name, sir? And I say, von Sydow. And how would you spell that, sir? And I spell it, and I said, thank you very much, Mr. von Sydow.
I'm Archie Zaraletta.
Well, after a long-fought battle, classic rock band Led Zeppelin has won a legal fight in a copyright lawsuit over its iconic hit Stairway to Heaven. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in the U.S. upheld a verdict by a jury that found the song did not copy or infringe on another song, the 1968 song Taurus. The verdict is a significant victory for the music industry's efforts to fight frivolous copyright lawsuits.
All that glitters is gold, and she's buying a stairway to heaven.
Well, you've been listening to International Edition on Voice of America. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Pete Hundley, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful day.
And she's buying a stairway here. There's a sign on the wall, but she wants to be sure, 'cause you know sometimes words have to mean. In a tree by the brook, there's a songbird who sings. Sometimes all of our thoughts are misguided.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McKinney.